Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ground Zero Growth. I'm your host, Sam Sapp, and owner of LockBod. I'm joined today with Megan Brenner, co-founder of Kraft & Sage Wealth, wealth advisor, certified financial planner, CFP. How are you doing today, Megan?
Great, Sam. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you on, specifically because you have a very interesting CFP journey, don't you?
I do. Not many women in my field, so the journey has been interesting, and I definitely have a different perspective on it from a personal standpoint too.
So I want to start by diving into and highlighting the CFP because I honestly, part of my journey starts with an early podcast, interestingly enough, kind of like the one I'm hosting, in where the host itself had a CFP and he went through just the depth of what was necessary to get the CFP. And he described it as he was a CPA, he described it as the most difficult certification he's ever had to strive to achieve. And so, would you mind speaking to the weight that that carries?
Absolutely, and he's not wrong. From my personal perspective as well, it's definitely been the most grueling but most satisfying designation I hold. But basically, the Certified Financial Planner course requires that essentially you go back to school. You take for most people they spread it over a year, but you take a bunch of different classes studying on the various disciplines that the CFP requires. Anything from tax planning, retirement planning, estate planning, those varieties of things. And you have to complete the study work for each class, take a exam for each class, depending on what program you are doing your studies through, and then do a final project. And also, if you complete all of that, then you're eligible to sit for the multi-hour exam. And that in of itself is you feel like you've gotten this far, and then you just hope that you can pass the exam and that all your efforts have been well worth it and are going to pay off for you when you go to sit for that exam. So a lot of times what you find is that you can either go two paths traditionally. One, a lot of colleges are now offering the CFP program as an extension of an undergrad. I did not have that opportunity. I did not know this is something I wanted to do when I was in my undergrad studies. And so, if you are not doing this right out of school or as part of your collegiate schooling, then you probably are going to fall in the path of which I did, which is already in a full-time job. And I was a little bit older when I took it. I am a mom of two kids. At that time, they were very small. So it's just not your traditional go back to school setting. You have a lot of other things to juggle at the exact same time. So that's kind of the different paths and directions you could go. It is an absolute, like I mentioned earlier, undertaking, but one that has definitely been well worth it in my career. So.
That's fantastic. So then on the career point, let's talk about where you're at currently, and we'll come back to it. So at a high level, what's Kraft and Sage Wealth, and what are you doing there as the co-founder?
Absolutely. So Kraft and Sage Wealth is a boutique financial planning firm. We're located in the Crossroads in Kansas City. I co-founded the firm with my partner, John Christie. We are different from a lot of firms in the sense that we are smaller, more boutique in nature. We are an independent registered investment advisory firm. And we honestly prefer to be that way. When we're working with clients, we're working with them through a lot of different challenges they're facing within their life. That could be something positive, it could be grief, whatever that may look like. And because we are smaller, we do pride ourselves on building that relationship with the client first, creating a comprehensive financial plan for them, and then utilizing tools such as different investment vehicles or insurance vehicles. To be able to help them achieve and navigate whatever it is they're going through. So we always lead with planning, and the investments and the things we implement just become a byproduct of that plan. very, very relationship focused, which is why I love what I do. You know, not I would hope there's a lot of people that could say this, but I know for sure, in my regard, I can get up every day and know that what I'm doing is going to make a difference, and that I'm going to get to work with somebody today that I'm truly going to enjoy. And I think that's one of the biggest things in my life that has been so gratifying and so fulfilling, is being able to do that every single day.
That's exciting. Well, and I like, so the relationship focus, I mean, I'm just thinking in some regard, there's a lot of wealth advisors out there, and I think there's an occasional scenario, if not maybe even a regular scenario, where you meet once or a few times, you get involved in the program, and then you never hear from again, unless you're the one proactively calling. And so I'm guessing it's very much not the case with Craft and
No, not
Phase.
at all. I actually tell clients, we enjoy being that first call when you're making a decision. We enjoy being one of the first people to know when you have a new grandbaby or a wedding or something to celebrate. Please include us in that. You know, the best relationships we have from clients are ones that are a mutual commitment between us and the client. And I also think, to your point, Sam, that's kind of how we stand out as well, is that building that relationship is just as important, if not more important, than, you know, performance maybe, or navigating the stock market. I mean, obviously those things definitely carry their weight, and that's the sole focus of it. But I think the key in that is truly being able to have a positive, proactive relationship with the client where they feel heard.
Gotcha. So I have to ask too, it's funny, we're not even quite able to get into the initial question yet, but you'll forgive me, my curiosity is taking over. So I talked to a lot of different advisors, and it's my understanding with regards to marketing, it's kind of a heavily regulated sort of a field. And so it's interesting because I want to talk about that specifically, because it seems like in a lot of cases, firms are hamstrung on what they're allowed to say publicly versus what they can't. And that can become very difficult when you're trying to educate people on, you know, how to pick a firm, what might be the best course of action, et cetera. Can you kind of tell me about what that hamstringing looks like in some cases and how people can get kind of the maximum, I don't know, how do you maximize your marketing? Let's put it that way. That's what I'm asking, I guess.
So you're right. Obviously, when you're managing a client's money and their life savings, it should be heavily regulated. You know, we've seen many instances in the past where that wasn't, and that a lot of times can end very unfavorably for the client. And so, while we have specific regulations and rules in place, I think it's super important to, as a firm, to include people on your team to help you navigate those regulations. You know, we take a lot of time and do our due diligence on how to run our compliance, on how to make sure we are doing things correctly and within, you know, the guidelines that we have set. It's something that we spend a lot of time on behind the scenes, just to make sure we are staying in line with everything that we should while delivering excellent service to clients. And I do think that, you know, having that in place is also a key factor in your success. You can either get wrapped up in a lot of rules and regulations and spend your time navigating those because you didn't comply, or you can just put the work in advance and make sure you're consistently staying on top of those things so you can focus on what you're there to do, which is to help a client. You know, with our clients, it is very relationship based. And so I try to address a lot of their, I wouldn't say concerns, but just answer a lot of those questions on how we're regulated, what investor protection rules are in place, what you should be asking. You know, because there are some instances where I meet with people for the first time and I will be the first to say, I don't feel like I'm the best fit for you. However, here's some other resources. Or if you choose to go interview another resource on your own, these are some things you should be asking to advocate for yourself. That's super important to me. I understand I'm not going to be a fit for everybody, but I feel like as a client, and as, you know, an investor or a saver or whatever you want to call yourself, I do feel like having somebody tell you, well, what should I be asking? What does this mean? How do I know what they're saying is, accurate? I think that's another reason that we kind of stand out is because it's our job, whether we work with you or not, to be an educator in this space for you and help you advocate for yourself, regardless if it's working with us or not.
Yeah, no, I like that. I resonate with that from a tech element because, yeah, and it's a special kind of person that does that, right? You have to be a little bit curious because you have to, because there's so many people I talk to that I feel like are just, in order to avoid the problem in the first place, we'll just stay the polar opposite. Like, just we won't even come close to. And it's like, well, but that's not understanding the rules, right? And the spirit of the rules. And so, yeah. All right. So now we'll get into the initial. So kind of tell me about your early days then. Tell me about kind of that first dream. You're in sort of your high school. You need to know you're going to go to college for and what you're going to do for a career. What did that kind of look like? What was your first dream? And have you always grown up in Kansas City?
I actually am a small town country girl. I grew up on a farm. Now, I will tell you, and my siblings will be the first to tell you, I'm not the outdoorsy type. They are. I'm laughing because they're like, oh, okay. But I grew up in small town, like the Ozarks area. My mom still lives there, but I enjoyed living out in the country. It was quiet, didn't have the hustle and bustle that we sometimes do here in the city. And I really enjoyed that upbringing. It allowed me to just really focus and spend time with people and relationships. My family are my best friends, so it's. I feel like that simpler way in my childhood allowed me and afforded me the opportunity to really grow my relationships. I went to College of the Ozarks in Branson, Missouri, which is a work school. You work your way through school and then graduate debt-free. So I am having grown up as the oldest of four and then, pursuing the path that I did with my collegiate studies, I am no stranger to hard work. It's just something I have ingrained in me. I've had a lot of great examples in my life, of hard work and determination, and I think that is key in who I am. When I went to college, I knew I wanted to do something in business, but I wasn't quite sure when I started. Like many freshmen going in, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted that to be, whether I wanted to do marketing or advertising or management or, run behind the scenes analytics or things of that nature. I took as many business classes as I possibly could. And I think trend that has rang true my entire life is that I am a student of my life. I am constantly learning. I don't think that's something that will ever change for me, but I just took that opportunity to take as many classes as I could to try to figure out what I wanted to do. And I would say probably my junior or senior year, I figured out, man, it would be really cool if I could find a company that was either just getting started and or maybe struggling and get in and figure out how to bring them back to life. That was like my big dream. I had no idea what that even entailed. But that was kind of the big dream I was going after is getting heavily involved in a company and seeing what I could do with it. And so I graduated college in 2009. If anybody remembers 08, 09, they know that, had you told me when I started college that I'd have a very hard time getting a job when I graduated, I would have laughed. Everybody was like, well, that's why you go to college. So then you're more marketable. You can get a better job. Well, when I graduated, I was competing with people who had lost their job and had 30 years experience, and you'd go get down to the final two in the interview process, and it would be me and the person with all the experience, and lost out on several opportunities. That was very humbling, to get in there and think, oh, I'm gonna get this job, I'm gonna get this job, and then not be chosen. So I ended up moving back home, and took a job at our local bank in a management role, which was very interesting, just in the sense that I'm right out of school. I wasn't planning on getting in banking at all, but I had to have a job. So it, I was planning on when I went to school living by
And
myself
you
and
got
having my own
straight into a
apartment.
management role. Is that what you were saying?
I did just
Okay, gotcha.
oversaw the tellers and like new
Yeah.
accounts department, which was interesting when you go into it because the people I was hired to manage have been there for a really long time and are all older than me. So it was important for me when I got into that to say, okay, these are people, these are relationships, these are things that I have to work towards, and that I may not have an automatic acceptance day one, but I am going to make it a point to make them feel heard, make them feel understood, and like they can come to me for anything. And to be 22 years old and have that mentality and mindset, that truly was my focus in that job,
That has
was
got to be the country over the schooling,
I
surely, right?
I think it had a lot to do with that. And I had my parents are phenomenal, in just what they instilled in me in regards to what's important and what's not. And people were what they said is important. Money comes and goes, opportunity will come and go. It's the people, it's the relationship. And so that's me wanting to connect with people is who I
Her
am
cry
now
for some
just.
reason. I don't know why. It's just you're
It's
right.
the people. It's the
It's the money
people.
comes and goes. I think it's
It does.
the moment of a bank manager, wealth advisor saying the money comes and goes. It's the people that are important.
It's the
And
people. And
it is.
I have had so many experiences in my life where it just always goes back to the people. Always. You can be one of the richest people on earth, and if you don't have relationships that are fulfilling you each and every day, what do you really have? And so for me, people are where it's at. And so honestly, in that situation, it really continued to spur my just desire to help people. I know, a lot you can say that and oh yeah, I help people. Well, no, I truly mean it. That's where my heart is at. And so I ended up moving to Kansas City in 2011, and ended up taking a bank position in a sister company here, which was
Okay.
not the same position I had. We
Now remind
moved.
me what sparked the move?
My husband's job. Yep.
Gotcha.
So he got a new job in Kansas City, wanted to get back to this area. He went to school
Okay.
here. And we just made the leap and the move. No kids yet or anything like that. So we were able to make that decision, and I'm so glad we did. It's
Were you
led to
excited or anxious moving
very
from,
anxious. You're
okay.
taking a small town country girl out of her element and away
Right.
from her family and moving to a small apartment in a quote unquote city that doesn't just have the one stoplight in the square in town. So I was like, I have to learn how to drive in this. It just was, I was so anxious. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do for a job? I don't have any friends up there. I don't have any family up there. I ended up buying a dog to take with me. I was like, if
Okay.
we're going to do this, I'm getting a dog. But
Fair.
it's, yeah, it was quite the transition. And honestly, looking back at my life, one that I am incredibly grateful for, because I don't think, had I not had that reason to move, I don't think I would have done it on my own. And so I ended up taking a new accounts and teller position at a sister bank in Kansas City. So that was a step down for me. I had no management responsibility and I missed it. Not necessarily the
Okay.
management piece, but just the relationship building piece. So I would
Right.
do everything I could to try to build that with the clients that would walk in and the new accounts that I would open. And I ended up opening a bunch of accounts for my now business partner. That's how I met John. And he said, man, I wish you could work for our firm. And I said, yeah, I probably can. He was like, what? It's not a corporate, we're small business. I said, so? And he just kept putting up another what he thought would be an objection for me. And I was like, no, I really, if I'm going to make this leap into a world that's completely unknown to me. Yes, I had taken finance classes, but that's not the same as being in the field. And so I just said, I want to try something new. And yeah, let me try it. And he was like, well, you're only going to work part time. And I said, that's fine. I'll answer phones. I'll go get coffee. I'll take out the trash. I'll do whatever I need to do. And so he ended up hiring me. So I have a little bit different entrance into the industry than a lot of people because I started as a part-time assistant for my now business partner.
I want to talk for a second though, because I can't help but notice you talked about earlier at your college level almost kind of wanting to dive into a small thing. Can we rewind the clock a little bit and dive more into where did that thinking come from? And then how did that, I mean, we're talking now two different jobs, a move. It almost seems like whether you're aware of it or not, that dream that maybe was quiet for a minute has remanifested itself.
Yes. And so I, at the time, being 22, 23 years old when I first got out of school, and then navigating, a move and all of these things, I did not put it together. I didn't even see it that this was going back to the dream that had been laid on my heart in college. I didn't see it.
Wow.
And so, but now having gotten older and taking time to go back and think about my life to the point thus far, I was like, holy cow, there it is. And I don't know what in college put that so in the forefront of my mind and on my heart. Like, I do not know. I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to get into a smaller business. I want to make it grow. I want to be a part of it. I want to make those relationships. I want to make those connections. I don't know. And so now, having looked back, it's amazing to me how well the pieces of my life, maybe not on my timeline, maybe not in the speed in which I would want them to. I'm not always the most patient person with myself. But how things like
We have
that have
that in
just,
common. We
yeah,
have
like
that in
I'm patient
common.
with a lot of people,
Oh,
obviously. I
man.
work with
Yeah,
people, but
yeah,
like for me and myself, I'm like, hurry up.
yeah.
But
No.
it's amazing to me how, yes, that has come together. And I am so incredibly grateful for the people in my life that have helped support my dream up until this point. And again, how cool is it that I get to get up every day and I'm living my dream?
I know.
Honestly,
Wow.
like I the even the worst days or the days that I have, a lot of email or things like that to be doing, that I just am like, holy cow, I am so incredibly grateful for this opportunity. And I get to go to work every single day and enjoy what I do. And, I is my hope for my friends, my family, my children, that they can find something that they feel as passionate about and can live and fulfill, their dream. And so when I started, I started on the operation side, part-time, essentially receptionist. And I just kept rolling up my sleeves. This is where a lot of my grit came into play. I'm very gritty. Grit and grace are two things that often people describe, used to describe me with. So I just kept telling my now business partner, I said, hey, what do I got to do to be hired full time? What do I need to do to take that next step in my career? What do I need to do to be one of the ones sitting in front of clients, listening to them and trying to solve the financial puzzle? What can I do to make our firm different? And so I just thankfully, John, my business partner, has always been a supporter of my dreams in this and never once has shut down anything I've said in regards to that you're asking for too much, or we don't have that space for you, which I think being independent and smaller has been phenomenal, right? Because he sees where my heart is at and says, if that's what you really want to do, and this is what it provides for our clients, then let's make it happen. And so I am so thankful for his support. That's not always the case in a lot of jobs, especially in financial planning.
Well, and I wanted, that's what I would, I really wanted to dive into that because I already feel like, I mean, John sounds like a pretty intelligent person, but then also with a great heart because he's willing to support
Very.
that. And I want to talk about, I was just talking to somebody the other day that had been involved in their firm for some time and under the guise that some sort of partnership would eventually happen, and it never did. So as you're kind of going about this story, can you explain? I would like to hear more of the positive aspects that helped you to understand, the end goal is there, So that way, people listening that maybe think there's an end goal but have seen warning signs can juxtapose that with what you're saying.
Absolutely. I think, a lot of my success and where I am today can be attributed to having the right people on my team. And I mean that from a personal standpoint. So, John, being a phenomenal mentor in this space, I have a few other people that I reach out to that when I need tough love or I'm thinking of something different that maybe is not the actual reality, but it's my perception, will have that hard conversation with me. I honestly think that one of the biggest differences in my success and where I am today in not quitting over that time is that hearing the word no is just the start of a good negotiation. If you know in your heart that this is what you want to do, and that this is what's going to make the biggest impact for you and those around you, you have to chase it. And there's going to be doors that automatically get shut. Some of them need to stay shut. Some of them, that's not going to work. If you find yourself in a position where you do not have support and you're not feeling like you're being heard or listened to, that may not be the best place for you. And it takes a lot to get out of your comfort zone and leave something that's stable, right, wrong, or indifferent, to continue to chase your dream. I would not have been able to do that or keep pushing myself the way I have had I not had a team of people around me that are wanting the absolute best for me too, but are also brave enough to tell me when I'm thinking about things incorrectly. You got to be able to have those people on board or, on the bus for you that are willing to have those tough moments with you that you can reach out to for support or, absolute guidance or the gut check when you need to have one. I
So
think that's incredibly important.
you're almost describing more of, so with regards to like finding the warning signs and knowing then plotting the course and checking the doors, you're describing a Napoleon Hill mastermind group, a personal group of people that you call, and I've got a few I could name off, but it's that you call that kind of help ground you and encourage you. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, I
Okay.
absolutely have that group of peers and mentors that I've built over time that I truly value their opinion. And I
Okay.
feel like they know me well enough to help when you're in the middle of the storm, to be very, very grounding for me in that moment. But they also know the fire that I have. They also know she's not going to sit in this long. And so I
Yeah.
think just being, determined and standing up for yourself. I cannot tell you how many times, especially women in my industry, we're getting better at it, but who are scared, I mean, rightfully so, but to say something, you
Yeah.
absolutely have to say something. Stand up for yourself. If, if that's something you want to do within your firm, go find out how to do it.
Yeah.
I always tell women because I have had the pleasure of running into a lot of young women coming right out of school, and they're still asking me, can you be a CFP and a business owner and a mom? Or do you have to pick? And
Yeah.
that truly hurts my heart because yes, you can. Is it going to be easy? Nope. Are you going to have to work really hard? Yes. Are you going to have to work unconventional hours sometimes to get it all in the day? 1,000%. But if that's truly something you want to do, you can't let no get in the way of that. You've got to keep fighting for yourself. And so I think that's something that 20-year-old Megan would have thought, oh, yeah, I've got this. I'm an advocate. Nope, no idea. As I've gotten older, I've started to realize more and more what's important and what's not. And then I just try to reciprocate that same mentality and respect to the people around me. So if I feel like I need to be heard or need to be supported in some way, I'm going to do my very best to make sure the people I come in contact with, whether that be mentorship or people on my team or my clients, feel heard and respected and understood. And so I just want to encourage, especially, the younger crowd or women that are thinking, oh, I just don't know if I can do that. Yes, you can, but you got to find that support group for yourself, and you got to believe in yourself and not quit when the going gets tough. It's going to. If I said it wasn't, that's not true. It's going to get difficult, but it's what you do with that difficult moment and pull yourself out of it. I honestly think that one of the things that has grown the most for me over time is emotional intelligence. Just understanding where some of those feelings are coming from and why. And then being able to navigate that either by myself or with that support system around me. So honestly, you just got to spend some time evaluating what is truly important to you and hold on to that, regardless of your situation. It may not be easy. You may have to do something that feels like completely irresponsible, like leave a stable position to continue to chase something you know in your heart is right. Not easy to do. Got to spend some time thinking through that.
Well, and so this the next question that came to my mind, you're talking about all this CFP, financial planner, business owner, mom, and then I'm thinking, man, we can't discount the fact that that's a difficult juggle. And then I'm thinking back on, you specifically said women sometimes getting better but struggle at saying no, and I've seen that firsthand where it's like, a business administration administrator, female, and they're clearly overworked, and it's because they struggled to say no at, and especially when you're juggling those three, can you kind of help me understand A, how you juggle it, and B, what are some warning signs for you that you are something has to give? And can you give some examples of things, moments where you have given, moments where you're like, this relationship needs to go. I can't answer this phone call anymore. Or, stuff like that. I don't wear a smartwatch specifically because that was something that had to go. It just dinged way too much for me.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah, absolutely. And I think to kind of understand where I come from on this, it would be important to just highlight one of the most pivotal moments of my life. So in 2019, my dad had a massive stroke at the end of the year. He was 58 years old. Nobody saw it coming, obviously. He was in pretty good health. And through that period of, he never left the assisted living facility. He never got to come home. We did the COVID year in a nursing home. So I think in that time, and this is all while my CFP courses were going on. So I was working full time, slowly grieving the loss of who my dad was, and taking my CFP courses at night, late at night, while also parenting. And so I honestly think if I had to look back at my life, that is one of the most pivotal times because what that experience makes you pause and reflect on is what is truly important in life. And a lot of times when I start getting and going, and it's this just hamster wheel, and I'm going, and I have so much on my plate, and I have to pause and reflect at the end of the day, is this truly important, and does this align with my values? If it doesn't, you have to be strong enough to either let it go, to delegate it, to remove it. Again, this goes back to me for the relationships in my life are the most important. This goes for personal and professional. It's all about the relationship for me. And so, going through that experience of losing my dad at a very young age, he ended up passing away in 2021. But navigating that chapter of my life and that season of my life truly puts things into perspective. It's not about the money. It's not about how many things I can get done in a day. It's not about how many sports my kids play, or the accolades, or the designations, or anything of that nature. It is, does this truly matter in my life? And does this align with my values? And I spent so much time in reflection in that stage of my life that it just automatically had this jolt to my system to put into perspective, does this matter? And I think in today's society and in the hustle that we all are expected to do, where we're on 24/7, I became very protective of my time, of my headspace, of my efforts. And it really does put into perspective and makes you question, pause and question, is this truly what I need to be spending my time on? Life is so short. It's so precious. And I want to make sure that the things that I am doing and the time that I am spending and the energy and effort and heart I'm putting into things are going into something that I feel is very important. Now, it is so easy, especially when you are trying to make a difference and work your way up that corporate ladder. And, you know, you're the one that stays late. You're the one that takes on all the projects. You're the one that does all the things. And, you know, you still have to be a mom at the end of the day. I have to switch gears every day when I come home. Those kids are waiting for me, regardless of what kind of day I've had. So it's just being mindful of how much you can handle, how much you can keep on your plate, learning to delegate when it makes sense to do so. Couldn't tell you the last time I was in an actual grocery store. I order all my groceries. That's the only way it gets done. Just trying to find different ways to navigate those pieces, but remain true to who you are. And I think that's something that I spend a lot of time in reflection. I think I'm a thinker all the time. So I have to be mindful of, ooh, this is starting to feel like too much. I need to take a step back real quick, reevaluate a couple of things, and does this truly matter? And does it align with my values at the end of the day? If it doesn't, it's got to go, or we got to find a different route to get that done. And again, thankfully, I work in an industry and with people that align with my values and who I am. I get to go to work every day and work with people, and that's all I want to do. It's phenomenal. Like I said, I really do think has like fallen into place, not on my timeline. We know how that goes, but like has fallen into place over time where a lot more of my life is falling into those values, and allowing me to live into who I think I truly am. So I would just caution anybody as you get going and you start to feel that burnout, just take a moment to pause, breathe, reflect. Does this align? Is this truly important in the grand scheme of things?
No, I like that because I think that solidifies like we need to have a value system and which solidifies our integrity and what we will and won't compromise. And what I'm hearing from you is at an apex time of, it's normally, right? It's a lot of family, or it's a lot of work, or it's a lot of career passion. And I'm hearing for you, all three were basically at the peak of difficulty with regards to attention-seeking necessity. And that was the moment where you were able to solidify, these are my values, this is what's important, and everything else is going to either end up delegated or disconnected. And I love the comment on the groceries because I'm just thinking back on all the wealth advisors or accountants or otherwise that might have the notion of like, well, how much money are you wasting on ordering groceries? But the reality is it's almost a controversial mindset. I don't think it is really, right? It's you have to maintain lift, right? And the more you're going up, the less drag. I mean, you want some of it, that's the only way you get lift. But at some point, you need less of it so you can maintain it.
Absolutely. And honestly, like that's it just you just have to sit down and think to yourself, okay, well, what are some things that I have to do anyway that maybe I can make a little easier on myself? And then is it worth any sort of extra cost associated with it? Because time and money are two things that I think we always have to evaluate. And for me, grocery shopping is on the weekends. So I work really hard throughout the week. I try to be as efficient as possible within my workday to make sure I'm handling clients, make sure I'm doing everything that I need to do. But then on the weekends, I thought to myself, I'm like, that's when I usually grocery shop, and it usually takes time, and that my kids don't enjoy the grocery store, and nobody wants to deal with that in the middle of the grocery store. But I'm like, that's time I could be spending with my kids. So is it worth it to me to spend the extra whatever to have that time where I can give my kids my undivided attention when I know during the week I hustle and so do they? And to me, that was worth it. I get one-on-one time with both of my kids over the weekend, and I spend that, and I don't even worry about it. The groceries show up, and I'm like, great. The most thought I put into it is what we needed and what we were eating for the week. It wasn't, oh my gosh, I have to go find time to do this and drag them along if they and they're not going to want to go when I could be playing with my kids. So for me, it's just all about where your values are at, what's truly important. And I understand not everybody can do that. I haven't always been able to do this. But I think that's something that as I do personal planning for myself in my goals, what do I want to live into this year? What could I be doing better as a mom, as a partner, as a business owner? Again, goes back to that reflection period. That's something for me that was a non-negotiable. I wanted that time with my kids. And so how do I make this easier on myself? What are some things on my to-do list that have to happen anyway that I could eliminate from my plate? Or go about a different way that's going to feed into truly what's most important to me in that time, which is my kids and getting time with them. So it's just trying to navigate all your lists and your to-dos and try to get them more aligned with your values and how can you continue to make steps, even if it's baby steps, towards living into what's truly important.
So let's dive back to how does an assistant who doesn't have any wealth advisement experience become a co-founder of a or a co-owner of a wealth advisement firm? And again, kind of what kind of atmosphere fosters that? What kind of
You
heart
know,
or spirit lets that happen?
I was kind of laughing as you were asking that because I just was thinking back to like the young me and I'm like, holy cow, am I stubborn? I just think of poor John. I constantly was like, okay, well, I think I can do that better. Or what if we did things this way? I did my very best to just interject myself as much as possible. Like I had no problem giving my opinion, whether it was welcome or not. At that point, they're like, who does this lady think she is? And I'm like, no, I just, again, it goes back to what I said earlier. I have such a passion for learning. I am
How
a
many
student of my
folks?
life.
How many folks were present when you became assistant? Was it just you and him? I want to get that groundwork.
No, so we were still very small. So it was
Okay.
myself, I was the only assistant. And then
Okay.
John was one of the advisors. And then there was another advisor in the office that I also was the assistant for named Mark. So it was two
Okay.
advisors and me.
Okay.
And Mark was very much in a later stage of his career, so
Okay.
not as growth oriented as John. John was very much in the startup, up and coming, how do I get more clients? Hungry,
Growth
very, very
mode.
hungry.
Growth
Yeah,
mode.
growth mode. So John and I are very like-minded in a lot of ways. And so I
Gotcha.
immediately was like, how do I get in here, one, show that I can bring value to the table. What are some things that I can improve in here, even in my short amount of time? So it was like making the office paperless, finding the electronic storage that we were going to use, creating different efficiencies within a process. And it's so funny because if you ask John, he'll tell you, he's like, it was great because she wasn't looking to me to teach her. I would just go figure it out. I'm like, hey, here's am I thinking about this correctly on this form or paperwork or whatever? And he'd say, yeah. And he's like, but I don't have time to get to that right. And I'm like, no, I got it. I'm not asking you to teach me. I'm gonna go figure it out. I'm gonna go call the back office and see who I can talk to and muddle my way through this. Or I'm just gonna figure it out. And it's, I think, kind of that determination. I was constantly looking for opportunity to make a difference because I wanted them to hire me full time. I wanted them to see my value. So even if I wasn't meeting with a client, how could I take what I was responsible for and expand that in the operation side? How can I make us more efficient? How can I provide better client service? What ways do I need to be supportive to you? Or what are some things that stress you guys out that, I could take? It's not a big deal. I was constantly looking for those opportunities. So when I got started, was like, okay, well, I still had a little bit of that fear, right? As we all do. You're starting something new. This is not the industry you studied in. I always thought of being a financial advisor as like, whoa, too scary. Not that's people's legacy. That's their money. There's a lot of rules and things you got to know. And I'm like, I'm just going to be the assistant. I just want to answer the phones. I just want to work, you know? And then I got in it and I got
I love that
hungry for
hesitation.
it. I was so hesitant. And you start to like question, you're like, are you really good enough to be doing it? And then I'm thinking, stop. Yes, I am. It's going to take time. And so
Yeah.
I got in it and my fire and passion for what they were doing and how they were helping people, I was like, holy cow, I want in on this. Like, I want to be, an advocate for people. I want to figure out this puzzle. I want to put this together. How do I do this? And so then it was, we'll go get some of your licensing done, not the credentials of the CFP or anything like that. Go get licensed. Okay. So about 4 years in, I went and got all my licensing done and they hired me full time. And then I was, what's the next thing I can do? How do I, and then I start, I remember having this day where I just was like, be an advisor. I want to do this. Like, and I, they thankfully, again, John and Mark were always so supportive. Like they'd let me sit in on meetings and take notes. And I would sit in there and I'm like, what am I going to learn today? And then I would make up questions in the middle of the meeting, just on the side of my paper that after the meeting was over, I would snag one of them and be like, okay, so you said this, but why? Or did you notice the wife's reaction when you said that? I don't think she was tracking, but he was. So I loved how you paused to make sure both were on the same page. It just was like, the human principle of it was so fascinating for me. And I just wanted more and I want to be more involved. And I honestly think that, again, I go back to that pivotal moment in my personal life where I had, I just become an advisor in an advisor role. And that's what I wanted to do. John was like, great, you're more than qualified. Let's just get this done. And then I embarked upon that big CFP process. And then my personal world came crashing down. And I remember being sitting in my guest room, like 11:30 at night, a weekday evening. It had been a really rough day for my dad, where he was at his facility, and we were going to have to start making some very tough decisions for him medically. And I just put the kids to bed a few hours prior, and I'm studying, and I'm doing the hardest professional endeavor of my life by my choice, not something that somebody told me I had to go get. I chose this. And so I'm in the middle of it and I just start crying. I'm like, what am I doing? This is so hard. Why am I doing this to myself? I'm losing my dad. I am, grieving. I have two small children to raise and I have a full-time job. This is ridiculous. Why am I doing this? And I just had this aha moment hit me, where I was like, no, I'm doing this because this is my purpose in this. Had I not had
What kind of
the
hours
professional,
is that? I'm
oh my
so
gosh.
sorry. I need
No,
to
you're good. Like,
understand because you're working the full-time job too. And what kind of
correct.
hours? What kind of sleep?
Oh, I was barely sleeping. So if you take the grief element out of it, where you're not sleeping anyway, I was probably getting 4 to 5 hours, if that, an evening, very broken sleep. And then on Saturdays, I would do kids' activities with them. And then I would take all day Sundays and just lock myself in a study room at the library. And I would be there from the day, the moment the library opened, all the way to the end. I would come home, eat dinner, put the kids to bed, and then go back in our spare bedroom and study for another, I mean, I would do 10 to 12 hour days of studying on the weekends.
How did you navigate the and I'm sorry to hijack things, but I
No, you're
can't help
good.
but be curious. How did you na so they say, I mean, at about I think 4 to 5 hours, and that's again minus the grief element that you were talking about, you have you have an equivalent cognitive ability on par with somebody that's been drinking a lot of alcohol. And I'm personally very passionate about sleep because when I am sleep deprived, it is more difficult for me to, I tend to be, I can be a little bit of a jerk. I like to think I'm past that, but I've been a while without sleep deprivation. So I again, ideally past that. But so could kind of help me with, yeah, what was Megan like at that moment when in the next day, how much coffee are you holding it together like, "Hi, great to see you. You parked in my parking spot." Or, what's that look like?
I was definitely fatigued, and I think that, those around me knew. I mean, they knew it. If you knew me at all, you knew I was holding on. And I thankfully, again, had such an amazing support system to lean on that
Wow.
allowed me a lot of grace, a lot of grace. Like, hey, this is a dream of yours, and you are navigating this through the hardest time of your life. And we know this version of you when you come to work and when you contribute to the family is going to be the best version you're able to offer at that point in time. And I had a lot of grace in that, where people were like, you know what? Normal Megan would be able to do this. And we're not even expecting that of you right now. We're going to step in and take some of these things from you. We're going to pick up, and we don't even want to say slack because they wouldn't call it that. They were just so supportive to where it was like, no. That you take care of you and what's important to you right now. And a lot of times for me, studying was like a good distraction because it was quiet. It was just me and my notes and my laptop and my books. And I could just sit in there and hone in on something that had no emotion, that had, no physical demand on me other than just locking in mentally. And it was an escape, I think, in a lot of ways for me. And just leaning on things that I knew would give me some semblance of peace, spending a lot of time with my kids. I cannot tell you, friends would show up at my door with like dinner and they're like, here you go. One less thing for you to think about today. And I just talk about a support system. Like, I am so incredibly blessed and they do it no matter what. My work is like my family. We're very close-knit. It's a smaller office. And, when you're sitting in the ICU in Columbia after your dad's had brain surgery, which is, Columbia is several hours away from Kansas City, and the elevator door opens, and there's the people that you work with getting off the elevator to come and sit with you in the ICU waiting room. They did that. That
How
is.
are you building this support system? Where did it come from? Who shows up with dinner and says one last thing for you to think about? I mean, I've met these people, I know these people, but I need to understand how you built it.
I honestly think that the reason I have the support system that I do is because at one point in time, I had taken time off my plate to do the same for them. I am constantly finding things to be involved with, whether that be, a leadership group that I'm in that's also like family right now, to something happens at the office. I'm there. I try to give that exact same type of love and support and relationship to the people in my life as well. And so, I think it's a true testament to the relationships that I've built over time and that people have built with me over time that again goes back to your values. Yeah, the people that are in my life, thankfully, know when life gets rough, they're going to be there. I can count on them and they can count on me. And so I think it's just through experiences and putting myself out there to meet new people and work really hard to develop that relationship. Relationships are everything to me. And so I think over time, I've just built that solid ground with a lot of people, thankfully and fortunately. And when the going gets tough, they've got my back. And I never doubt that. And but they never doubt the same from me. If that makes
So
sense.
what I'm hearing is from every room you've been in, for the most part, you've gleaned friends from it by being genuine and caring in a way that they know, and so then they're willing to reciprocate when things get tough.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Cool. So, wow. All right, so you're an assistant. You're paying close attention. You've decided you want to be a wealth advisor. You're going after the CFP. Things are getting tough. You're making through it all.
Yeah.
Tell me about kind of the other side of that, I guess. What's it like getting through that? Was it you got the CFP? Congrats, we're done.
Oh no, you're never done. Like it's
Yeah.
that's the heart of an entrepreneur, man. Like you just a student of my life. It's you're never done. It just it the situations continue to shape you and mold you along the way, and it's just a new challenge, a new environment of okay, I'm gonna learn from this. And so like I mentioned earlier, I think in the middle of all the CFP studies, and when I was questioning everything, I was questioning every decision I had made. I was like, holy cow, why did I do this to myself? And I had this aha moment of like, no. The silver lining of everything that I'm going through personally with my family is that because of my work experience and my education, I was able to step alongside my mother in the financial sense and say, you go grieve, dad. I've got this. I have this all under control. I will deal with Social Security. I will deal with the life insurance company. I will deal with the investments and the whatever, And I don't think I would have been able to do that. And so the only, I mean, maybe not the only, but the thing that kind of resonated with me the most in that whole process of losing my dad was what I do every day makes a difference, especially for women. I cannot tell you how many of my clients are suddenly single women, death, divorce, disability, and they're learning to navigate their new normal on their own. And it's scary. It is a lot, especially if you feel like you're doing it by yourself. And so I was like, have this new fuel and this new fire within me that was like, no, I have a purpose in being a financial advisor and I'm going to help these women. That's what I'm going to do. So I, again, talk about life falling into place. As soon as that happened and we ended up losing my dad, I started getting new clients, and the clients I was getting were single women, suddenly single women. And it just started clicking into place where I could be that value add for them, and I can sit across from you at a table and say, I truly understand what this feels like. And I know that you're going to have your ups and downs, but you're not going to do this alone. I'm going to do this with you. And we're going to make it. And we're going to have some days that you're like, holy cow, I only got one thing done today, but that was my 100%. I'm going to allow myself some grace. And then there's going to be other days when you're going to be feeling much better and we're going to get a lot of things accomplished. But please do not feel like you have to do that alone. And so I think for me, again, in developing that emotional intelligence, in defining more of who I am and what my purpose is in this and what I can bring to the table as a female advisor in this space, it just landed in my lap. Here's my opportunity to continue to make a difference, especially for women. And so a lot of what I do now is geared towards women's education. How can I give back in this space, whether that's mentoring young women who are coming up behind me? How can I continue to break these ceilings and provide more opportunity for the women in this space? How do I support other women like me that are trying to make a difference and juggling being a mom and, working full time and owning a business? It's all possible. So if I can just do one little thing every single day that either helps my clients, especially females, feel like they have it together and that they're going to make it, and then do something the same for the next generation behind me or the ones that I work with. That for me gets me going every single day. And again, I go back to how incredibly blessed I am to get the opportunity to do that. And I can see it. I think that's part of the thing that helps as well, right? It's tangible, it's measurable. You can see some of these things, the difference that is being made for these people and how they can settle into their own and have the confidence that they can do it. To me, that goes way beyond anything I could ever do in regards to gratification and being a part of something bigger than myself. So
And I really like it. I mean, it really sounds to me like you've solidified your why, really.
yes.
And I think that's amazing because I was just talking to somebody. I personally believe with younger generations, there is a shift where we are, and I'll throw me in there, less interested in a career and more interested in a calling.
Yes.
And it really sounds like you have narrowed down. It's like, look, this is my calling. This is how I'm going to positively affect the people, the community, and the world around me in my
Absolutely. And I,
job.
yeah, exactly. I, again, how cool. I get to take my career and live into my calling and into my purpose and do what I do best and what I love the most, which is care for people. And I just get to put it all together. And wow. Sometimes I have to like pinch myself. I'm like, holy cow, I am insanely lucky because I get to do this. And I'm going to meet some really cool people along the way. And I'm going to be introduced to people that are going to change my life. And it's just a very kind of like surreal moment in the sense that it's all coming together like that. And it does not come without its ups and downs. It does. Like you're going to have days that you're like, oh my gosh, I cannot do any more of this. But like, again, remembering my values, remembering my why I do what I do, why I keep trudging forward when the going gets tough. It really does help navigate those storms and remember your purpose and celebrate on the other side of things. So
I love it. So as we start to kind of wrap up here, it's tricky, but I like to give you the opportunity. If you were to kind of take one lesson to boil to the surface here and give to everybody else that's helped you along the way towards your dream, what would be kind of the highlight?
never give up. I know it's cliche. A lot of people say that, but if you take time to think about what that means for you, I think one of the beautiful things, Sam, that you do in these podcasts and other interviews you've done is highlight that not one size fits all in regards to success and what that looks like, how it's measured, and the path you go to get there. And I can honestly say, though, I think anybody could tell you that the one of the overlying themes that always rings true is don't give up on yourself. Because you're worth it. You are important. You deserve to be heard. You deserve happiness. And there's going to be a lot of things thrown in your direction that are going to feel like, oh, I just can't do that. I can't take that on. I can't trudge this mountain by myself. Find a support system. Find somebody, anybody, put the time in with them, create that relationship. They're going to come support you. They really will. But just don't give up on yourself, especially young women. We are made to do great things, and now's the time. And life is so short, and you've got to take each day and say, how am I going to make this better? What do I need for myself today to make me happy? What kind of legacy do I want to leave to my kids? What kind of purpose do I want to fulfill today? Whatever your why is, spend time finding that why and then just never give up, especially on yourself.
How can people engage with Craft and Sage Wealth and Megan Brenner?
So we are pretty easy to find. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, as well as LinkedIn at Craft and Sage Wealth. Our website is craftandsagewealth.com. All of our personal bio information and contact information is out there as well. And I would love to just even grab a cup of coffee with anybody. Like I said, I'm a relationship girl, so happy to do so. And Sam, thank you so much for the opportunity and for having me on today.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you.
Bye,
We'll see
everybody.
you.
Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.